Welcome to Not Quite Right. My name's Ed.
And I'm Amanda.
We are here at Words on the Waves 2026, and we spoke to Rosalie Hamm.
So Rosalie's probably best known for her debut novel, The Dressmaker, which was turned into a film with Kate Winslet. But Rosalie was here to promote her new book, which carries the very intriguing title, Look After Your Feet.
Yes.
Bit of a memoir, a look at aging, aging gracefully, I suppose.
The good and the bad.
The good and the bad, and a little insight into maybe what we have to look forward to.
So here's our chat with Rosalie Hamm. We are here at Words on the Waves with author Rosalie Hamm. Very nice to meet you, Rosalie.
You too. Good to be here.
So tell us about what brings you here to Words on the Waves.
An invitation, which I'm very grateful for. It's just to publicise basically my latest book, which is called Look After Your Feet. But I was very keen to come because I've never been up this way before.
Oh, really? Whereabouts are you from?
I'm from Melbourne.
Okay.
And I didn't even know where the Central Coast was. And so when the invitation arrived, yes, of course I'll be in that. So I'm very happy to be here. It's very lovely. And I saw a little clip on Facebook or one of those things, and the festival looked very vibrant and very jumpy a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
So I think it's all going very well.
Well, yeah. You've come on with some good weather, definitely, this weekend. Yes, it hasn't been too great lately. Mm. So tell us about your new book, Look After Your Feet. Yes. Is it a memoir?
It is. It's a, I don't know what genre you'd put it in, but it's a memoir, but it also is my observations and my take on the procedure of life. And it's basically about how you accumulate all this information as you travel through life. And as you've accumulated, you try to tell people, well, nobody's interested because they're just trying to get their kids to school and get over the hump in the week and all that sort of stuff. And I've worked out that that's just the way it is and that's the way it's always going to be. But also there was a lot of information out there about aging and how many of us older people there are and are going to be. And it was all a bit grim. And I don't think it's grim. I think it's a bit of a hoot, actually. It's quite
Who's saying that that's a problem?
Just the general information. Is there's statistics on dementia and aging. And if you listen to the health report on Radio National, it all sounds a bit grim. And the books on the wisdom of aging and how to cope with it. But you don't have to. It's just the way it is. Yeah. It's meant to be. So you just adjust to it. And I found that my family adjusted with me.
Whether they liked it or not.
Whether they like it or not. But they say things like, they talk about you in the third person as if you're not there. And they'll say, well, you sit there and you sit there because grandma's going to sit in the front. And I go, ripper, I love sitting in the front. You know, so there's, you know, it's stuff like that. And so I flipped the whole negative and decided to go joyously forth.
Do you think that that stems from your own personality, or has the process of writing the book also cemented that feeling for you and that perspective?
It comes from my personality, but I was also, I worked in aged care for 20 plus years, and that kept me alive on a few continents and while I was trying to be a writer. And so you understand humanity a lot more. You know, I just kind of think that people should spend 6 months in a nursing home working as compulsory education, because it makes you more empathetic and more tolerant, more patient, and more understanding of the process. And also elderly people have a very good attitude about the whole thing.
So when you were working in aged care, did you listen to anything anyone told you who was living in the facility, or did you also ignore their advice and have to learn on your own?
Look, I ignored their advice in my early 20s, but the longer I stayed, the more I came to understand, because that's what life does. And I really started to appreciate the life that they'd had, because some people had just had a very normal, ordinary life. If you call raising children, you know, normal and ordinary, I don't think it is. And others had done amazing things, extraordinary. So I kind of learned the value of the individual and what a life meant in its entirely personal. Mm. It's all got to do with you and how you've conducted your life. And so you may as well do it happily.
Mm. I mean, your book's called Look After Your Feet. What is it about feet in particular that you wanted to draw people's attention to?
And that's just a big metaphor for just look after yourself.
Yeah.
And the thing about your feet is that they transport you, take you wherever you want to go. And when you sit up in the morning and swing your legs over the bed and put them down, and once your blood's adjusted in your body and you stand up, you stand on your feet, you kind of know what sort of day you're going to have.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And then you really find out on the journey to the ensuite. And so it all kind of starts from there. And so it was just something I said one day, and the publisher said that's a good title for the book.
Mm-hmm. It's very intriguing. So instead of getting out on the wrong side of the bed, you just get out on the wrong set of feet sometimes? Is that the idea?
Because they get worn out. We've been walking around on them for a long time, and often people don't really look after their feet. And if you can't walk from the international terminal to the domestic terminal and carry 7 kilos of luggage, then life's not worth living as far as I'm concerned. So
you're talking about advice that people give and don't listen to. Is that your core piece of advice, is to look after yourself?
Yeah. You do. And if you do, you can kind of adjust to what's coming. And if you engage your body and your mind and sally forth happily, happy things will happen. That's my philosophy anyway. Yeah.
So how does that work from a writing perspective, like your writing practice? Are you one of those people who writes every day?
Yeah, I am. Sometimes I'll only write 4 words, but other times I won't. But I've learned that it's best to get up in the morning, get a cup of tea and go and sit down and write. And I write until I don't feel guilty anymore. And then I write until I know what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. I don't leave till I know what's going to happen next, and then I can get on with my day. But if you're a good girl and do the hard work, then you get a lovely afternoon.
We've spoken to a lot of writers as well at this event who have challenged themselves to go in different directions with each book, and it sounds like you've moved into a different direction with a memoir. Are you still finding motivation to work on novels as well?
I am. While I've been doing my little book tour, people have been asking me about my other novels, and it's made me miss, you know, creating a scene and making a metaphor or a simile or painting an horizon with words, and it's made me miss the drama. It was lovely to write nonfiction. I really enjoyed it. I'll probably go back and write something else, but I'm longing now to go back and create a whole world for somebody else.
So my understanding is that the book you're best known for, The Dressmaker, was your debut novel. Is that correct?
It was. I wrote that to pass a course.
Oh, well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tick.
Yeah. I did pass. Yeah.
So that experience of it being turned into a film and all of that must have been like a real whirlwind for you as well. Were you involved much in that, or was it very much the rights are sold and you step back?
It was a bit of both.
Okay.
The person who made the film was a childhood friend, Sue Maslin, who came from Girildry, as did I. And it took 15 years. It didn't come out for 15 years after a publication in 2000. And it took that long for her to raise the money. And there was a few producers, but she was the one that came along and got $20 million and Kate Winslet on board. Mm. And she did that all because I said she could, and I said, you can only do that if all my friends and family can be extras, and she said, sure. So in that regard, we were all pretty much involved, but we were also not involved because there's a hierarchy in filmmaking, and us extras were down at the bottom of that hierarchy, having a lovely time, I have to say.
Did you do the screenwriting for that one, or was...
No.
No. Okay.
I know nothing about screenwriting.
And you're happy to keep it that way?
Yeah, I am, actually, because, you know, I found myself, I gave it a couple of goes for a couple of producers, but I found myself describing too much. Mm-hmm. Like, there's quite an art to what's implied in the description and the minuscule amount of dialogue that has to be conveyed. That's the actors do it all with their body and their mind and the set and the weather and all that kind of stuff. Whereas I have to write all that in.
And you miss it, do you, if you're not able to do it?
Well, then I think that they're not going to know what to do. You know, but of course they do. They're actors, you know. And I learned that just by watching them on set and understood that I'm best left writing fiction.
It was good to know that about yourself.
Yeah.
So as you think about your next book that you're working on, is there any time period or any setting that is drawing you in?
I tend to, something comes out of me every 5 years or so. I mean, you know, goes to the publisher every five years or so. And that's, I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
I am. And the next book, I hope, will be a fictionalized interpretation of a friendship over from the age of 9 clear through to 70. So that's what I've got in my mind. And that's what I intend to start tomorrow morning, Monday,
o'clock. Wow. Okay. Excellent. So is this a contemporary novel then? Or?
Yeah, it will be. It'll probably start in the 50s. Mm-hmm. This is all pure speculations. It may never happen. So don't wait for it. And it'll come, it'll go all the way through to now.
It's very refreshing, actually, to hear you say it takes you 5 years, you know, between, because I think there's a lot of pressure, or certainly a lot of authors we speak to feel pressure to just be churning out this work. And I feel like that would be very draining and very difficult to maintain. I mean, some authors can do it, but for others, like, you need to fill that bucket again, right?
And, you do.
And get passionate about a new idea enough to see it through all the way to completed work.
I agree completely.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with us, Rosalie.
That's been a lovely way to start the day.
And best of luck on your panel.
Thank you very much.
This has been a special presentation of the Not Quite Right podcast in collaboration with Words on the Waves Writers Festival. Check the show notes for more information about Words on the Waves and the books mentioned in this episode. If you're new to the podcast, please join us again for our regular episodes where we talk about media, culture, and the art of writing.
Something doesn't seem quite right.